When you were a child, were you a kid who cared a lot about fairness and justice?
I definitely was a kid who was for the underdog. I did not like it when a kid was getting picked on, and so I was certainly one of those who would jump in, and I was bossy, I would say. But I think I had some, I hope I had some leadership qualities even back then.
Anne McKeag is a descendant of the White Earth Nation, and she is the first Native American Supreme Court Justice in the state of Minnesota. When in your life did you decide to be a lawyer?
We had to do a study on what we wanted to do for career day. So I had done this big article on I wanted to be a dentist because Dr. Stubbins, I don't remember his exact name, but he was in Bemidji. He was our dentist, and I really liked him. So I thought, I'm going to be a dentist, and I did this big, long article, and I can remember this big mouth that was on the front of this light blue cover. But as a result of that, I learned that I had to have a lot of science, and I was not good at science. I didn't enjoy science. So it actually was a recognition that I cannot be a dentist. And for some reason, I picked lawyer. And I'm not exactly sure why. It might have been from some TV show that was on at the time because I didn't know any lawyers. Mm-hmm. But I picked in ninth grade, I'm going to be a lawyer. And I stuck with that all the way through high school, through college, and then on to law school.
What was your undergrad degree in before going to law school?
My undergrad is in English with a writing concentration.
Okay. So you are a Native woman. How has that impacted your work?
It's given me both opportunities and challenges. You know, as someone who's come from Federal Dam and didn't have a lot of exposure to perhaps the bigger issues and had really no ties or recognition to the Minnesota Supreme Court, let alone the U.S. Supreme Court, it's a big learning curve, which has been a challenge. But at the same time, I think it's given me some skill set that I'm eternally grateful for, which is just common sense and how to connect with people and to know that not everyone has had a great life or great opportunities. And so I think we just have to recognize that our state has a very diverse population in many ways, not just by race or by culture. And so I think it's given me a broader perspective that I'm grateful for. But at the same time, along with that comes a lot of responsibility. Not only am I believe, the first Native woman on the Minnesota Supreme Court, but our research has shown that I'm the first Native woman across the United States on a high court. And that comes with a lot of responsibility. I don't want to screw it up so that others can't follow after me because a lot of people are watching.
Right. You're blazing a trail.
I hope so, yeah.
You are in town to speak at a conference focused on creating success opportunities for Native youth. What do you see as the biggest challenges for Native youth, and how can we work to turn those challenges into opportunities or be catalysts for change?
There are a lot of overwhelming challenges that are facing Indian Country just across the nation. And in fact, I was listening this morning, and there was a clip of some elder Navajo women on the reservation and how many of them are without food and they're without heat. And so there are some women who are coming to the reservation to try to help those elders. That's not an uncommon problem. And when I look at youth and my experience in the child protection and child welfare system, we have a huge disparity as far as graduation rates, Minnesota being one of the worst, sadly. And I don't think it's for a lack of people trying, but we have got to really dive into perhaps some mentoring. You know, one of the things that I think really helped me along the way, I had a mother who was very well-versed in education. She valued education. She was a Fulbright scholar. And then my dad, a 49er, who really believed in the physical labor. So I was lucky. I had the best of both worlds. But neither of them were a lawyer. And so as my career progressed, I was introduced or met a Native man who was from the White Earth Reservation, Judge Robert Blazer, who was the first Native judge in the Twin Cities to sit on district court bench. He took me under his wing and really mentored me along the way so that at some point I could try to become a district court judge and then move on from there. He invested a lot of time, and I think that's what we have to do. You know, as a kid, you need to be able to make a connection with somebody, know that that person cares about you and is going to be there and is going to perhaps show you some things that you would not normally see and something you can aspire to and dream about, and then they can help you reach those dreams. So mentoring to me is a big deal and way more I think, important than what we can recognize. And it's not that hard. It's just time. We have to give our time.
Absolutely. My guest is Minnesota State Supreme Court Justice Ann McKeag. Justice McKeag is the first Native American to serve as a Supreme Court justice in the state of Minnesota. The Minnesota Supreme Court has more females than males. How does that mix of genders, ethnicities, and ages within the court itself impact the overall work that you do?
Everybody comes to their job with their own personal upbringing and life stories. And so that, I think, formulates the lens with which you look at things. And if you have the same, everyone looking through the same lens, we don't get very creative and we're going to miss something. You know, we don't see it from all sides. And so I think when you have a court as diverse as we currently have and with the female majority, I think that it has brought a richness to our view of cases and hopefully a richness to the decisions that we're making. It's been great as far as watching and learning from the conversation from my colleagues, some of whom are extremely experienced. And so I think it adds a lot of value.
How does it work when a case comes to you? What is that process even like?
Pretty intense. And I really can say that I didn't understand that process. As a district court judge, you know that you are operating in what I would call like an emergency room. It is crisis work. It is fast work. You got to get it right in a short period of time, and you don't necessarily have a lot of resources. So it's very high paced. And then you get to the Supreme Court, and it's a slower pace, but it's more intense. And so the cases come in, and we have meetings to decide as a group which cases we're going to accept. And those would be cases that are going to affect the state as a whole or that need our review or we think need our review. And so we vote on whether we accept them or not. Once we've accepted them, they'll get scheduled. But it's about, I would say, 1,000-plus pages of reading per case to prepare for argument. And then we have our argument, and then immediately after argument, we go into conference and discuss what we are going to do. And then someone authors the opinion, and then there's a lot of collaboration as you write the opinion, and then eventually it gets published.
All the justices are working together?
As much as we can. I mean, certainly there are times where people disagree, but even the times that there has been disagreement, it's very respectful, it's very professional. Mm-hmm. And it's just a recognition that people are coming at it from their different lenses.
Exactly. We all have our own pair of glasses on.
That's right.
You spoke earlier of the importance of mentors. You talked about how Judge Robert Blaser took you under his wing. And you also talked about the importance of mentors in children's lives, how a mentor can be conducive to a child's success. But you told me a story before we started taping that makes the case for a mentor at any age in a person's life and at any phase in their career. You reached out to United States Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor. What happened?
I had written a letter to Justice Sotomayor. That's not something that I normally do, but in thinking about whether I should apply to the Minnesota Supreme Court, I was looking for someone, some connection. It's like, do I belong there? And not only just from my mentors in this area, of which I have many really good ones, but I had read her book. So once I applied and I got the job, I wrote her a letter and I just said I wanted to thank her because I can't say that I felt a connection with anybody necessarily on the United States Supreme Court until I read her book. And it's as though parts of her life were parts of my life. And so it was really meaningful to me. And so I wanted her to know that. So I wrote this letter to her. And within days of her receiving that letter, her staff called and said she was going to be coming to town to do a talk and that she welcomed the opportunity to meet me. Well, who expected that? I mean, I didn't even necessarily expect for her to be able to read the letter.
Right.
So I had the chance to meet her, and she is so authentic, so humble, so real. And I was struggling at the time about whether I really had made the right decision about being on the court. And so I talked to her and I said, you know, did you ever feel like you didn't belong at the United States Supreme Court? And she said, every day. And she said, and that is why you belong there. So essentially, roll your sleeves up, girl, and you need to dive in because you have a greater responsibility than just how you feel about it. And it was really helpful to me, and it was the right moment. And I thought, what a wonderful human being. And she invited my family, because my children, three of the eldest immigrated from Mexico. My husband immigrated from Mexico. And so we have a blended family, five kids plus one, because we have another child who's living with us. And she said, bring your family out to D.C. I want to meet the kids. I want to give them a tour. And for someone who is at her level, who doesn't really know me at all, to take that time, that's the kind of thing that, for me, will make a difference and an impact on me forever.
Did you ever think you'd be on the state Supreme Court?
No.
And so it's do we go from here?
You know, for now, I'm going to focus on my job. It's a big transition. It's a lot to learn. But there certainly are those moments where I went to the State of the State address for the first time, and they do the announcement of, and now the members of the Minnesota Supreme Court, and they open the big doors, and I walk in, and one of the first people I saw was Jamie Becker Finn, who's from Cass Lake, and she's now a representative. We both looked at each other, and it really was, whoever thought these young women from the reservation would be sitting here in this moment? So it was a really nice moment.
That is Minnesota Supreme Court Justice Ann McKeag, the first Native American Supreme Court Justice in the state of Minnesota. She grew up in Federal Dam. Her family still lives in and around the Bemidji area, proving that no matter where you come from, no matter your gender, your age, your race, your background, if you work hard and you reach out to people who can guide you, you can go farther than you ever imagined. I'm Katie Carter. You're listening to Area Voices on Northern Community Radio.